Hello and welcome back to the latest episode of the Master of None podcast. I'm your host, as always, Stephen Murphy. I'm joined by the two regular rugby crew, which is Westy and Sam. And we are here not to talk about the IRC, the URC, or Champions Cup, or that. It's Sixmas. Westy, it's your favourite time of year. You think that Christmas is over, and then bang, we're back with a Sixmas. The Six Nations starts again this Friday, and I am genuinely excited for it. But before we get stuck into that, we'll go around checking with the lads. Westy, how are you? You're in the beautiful Ballina tonight. How are you?
Yeah, I'm up in the lovely northwest of Mayo, visiting the family for a few days. So it's been really nice. Yeah, weather's really good here. It's my niece's birthday this week, so down to see her. Got to hang out with my nephews yesterday as well, which was really fun. But yeah, other than that, it's been pretty quiet. Yeah, no matches for myself this weekend, so I have a nice weather and break after playing two matches in 2 weeks.
Sleeping in an ice bath, have you? Just sleeping in a cryotherapy chamber.
Yeah, I'm in the cryo chamber now. Do you know what? I don't know if you've got to that bit in Full Contact yet where the English lads are in the cryo chamber, but that's basically my whole life.
Weirdly enough, when I used to play GA, God, feckin' 10 years ago, our club was one of the first clubs to get one of the cryotherapy like kind of things in, but it's cold. It's you know, they're not lying about how cold it is. Just want to, you have to put like flippers on your feet in case your toes fall off, stuff like that, you know. And you can only be in there for 10 minutes or you'll die pretty much, which is always good. But
on Instagram is doing he's doing like an ice bath thing where he does an ice bath every day. And he's actually ended up getting sponsored by some ice bath company. But he introduced, he goes, "Hey, this is I'm going to do an ice bath every day for the year or however long I feel like it." So like, okay,
I mean, that's his prerogative. You know, he can do that.
That's how I feel with sea swimming. You know, I'm going to swim in the sea every day or whenever I feel like it. So far, I've gone once this year. when I feel like it again, I'll go again.
On that day, you felt like it. I never feel like sea swimming, but that's because I grew up in Cavan and we don't have the sea.
Do you get like freaked out when you look out your window and see the sea?
I actually do. You know that I've been saying the ocean is undefeated, okay? You'll never see me on a cruise. You won't see me on a submarine when I'm rich and famous, because that's fucking stupid. And any of that stuff, you won't see me on it. The best I'll do is I'll go to the beach occasionally, but even then I get bored. But anyway, again, we digress. Sam, how are you? How was your weekend?
I'm better now, so just over COVID. Last week, it actually hit me really hard. I was off work for the week and I was only just kind of testing negative by Sunday. So glad to be past it anyway, which is grand. I was in town for a little bit yesterday, but brain fog is mental. Like I've not experienced brain fog like that. I went into that, you know, that CEX shop to buy like secondhand games and stuff. It's called sex. I said this earlier and then I was told that it wasn't.
They advertise on the radio as sex. So it's like, that's come to the sex shop. And I'm like, what the hell? This is before the watershed.
I went in holding a pile of like 15 PS4 and Xbox 360s games. Clearly wanted to trade them in. Forgot what I was doing. And your man had to be like, are you looking to trade those in? And I was like, sorry. Madness. I'd never experienced anything like it in my life.
No, I just like carrying around these games for nostalgia purposes. But that's basically it.
I'm just get myself 30 quid.
I was going to say, normally they offer you like a euro. we'll give you a euro.
You know, I was looking at the thing and it was like FIFA 14, FIFA 15, FIFA 16, FIFA 17, FIFA 18. It was like, okay.
I've only been in there once, but I always fascinated by why they chose that as the name of their store. But each to their own, I suppose. Yes, before we get stuck in Six Nations, Westy, you mentioned the Full Contact Netflix doc. So I'm 3 episodes in. I think Sam is the same. Just finished the Andrew Porter episode. Watched it with my fiance and actually her father out in Connemara for the weekend. I was out in Connemara. It was so windy on Sunday, like way windier than any of the storms that have been over the last 2 weeks. And there was just like no word about it, just because Connemara, they're like, oh yeah, that's typical. You know, it's Sunday. What do you expect? It was crazy, but we got some good Netflix watching weather. But yeah, we'll just quickly go around and talk about the Netflix doc. I actually am really enjoying it. I was skeptical going in just because of the previous versions of Netflix shows. They tend not to be for people who watch week in, week out rugby. It tends to be for the people on the fringes, like my fiance and maybe her father, who's starting to show an interest in it. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great insight. Look, you're never going to learn anything that's too in-depth, but anything that shows maybe a bit more of a personality side to players. The likes of Ellis Genge, who I'm never going to be a huge fan of Ellis Genge, but seeing a little bit why the way he is and how he ticks, that's kind of fun to see. The Sebastian Negri stuff. I'll be honest with you, I've actually never heard him talk. I forgot that he was actually from Zimbabwe originally, so that was quite a shock. But that was really fun. Andrew Porter absolutely, you know, comes across as, you know, I don't think anyone dislikes Andrew Porter, but everyone I think likes him even a bit more now. And really, I just think it's brilliant, and it's really whet my appetite now for Friday, for the Six Nations starting up again, because it's just, I don't know what it is about montages or something like that, but watching it and like slow motion and reliving, you know, the Hugo Keenan try where Finley pops it back in against France, and I was just getting so pumped up in the sitting room at 10 o'clock at night on a Saturday watching this alongside my fiance, and I was like, God, it's such a great competition, I love it. So yeah, that was my experiences. But Westy, have you watched the whole thing? I think you have at the stage.
No, I'm probably about two episodes ahead of you. So I think I have 5 out of 8 watched. And yeah, I kind of feel the same. Like, now, look, I was watching it with my partner. My partner would have a fairly decent interest in rugby now. She'd know, like, comes to Connacht matches, would know most of the players. And we both kind of felt like not the only criticism, but one of the small criticisms I'd have of it was they kind of missed the trick by not spending 5 to 10 minutes in the first episode, just given like the very basics, like, you know, try is 5, a conversion is 2, and maybe a little bit of a history of the Six Nations. Now, they do dive into the history a little bit in each episode, but maybe just more of the individual teams and the rivalries that exist there. But I think all in all, as you said, like, it just gets you really pumped for the Six Nations. I think it kind of was done perfectly for it not coming out until now. Maybe or a week earlier, because now you watch it, you're like, oh God, I actually can't wait for next week when the Six Nations starts. I'm so excited. These games were it was so good last year. And as you say, I think they picked the people really well. I don't think Finn Russell is the most, you know, charismatic man to ever be on camera, but he's a very interesting character to follow. Same with Porter, same with Negri. Genge, as you said, it was brilliant. And even, you know, hearing about Marcus Smith's perspective as kind of the younger kind of the guys coming through. And they got decent access to the likes of DuPont and stuff as well. So it's good. It's not amazing, but like, it was never going to be something that's like, it's never going to be like the Squidge Rugby Netflix program. Like, it's not going to be in-depth analysis into formations and lineups. But I feel like they could sprinkle a little bit more of just basic analysis on top of it. Yeah, I think it's really good. I think it's really entertaining. And that's the point. You have to remember as well, like, this is a Netflix program. It's not a Six Nations program. It's not a World Rugby program. Netflix want people to watch it. They don't care about growing the sport or attracting new fans. So, you know, they want people who like rugby to watch it. And I think most people, no matter how much you think you know about rugby or don't think you know about rugby, there's something in it for most people, I think.
Yeah, I think the Finn Russell stuff was how open him and Gregor were about not necessarily always getting on, even though we all knew that, but still to be honest about that, I thought that was pretty cool. And yeah, people who are getting angry about the Messi comments, like, it was clearly the most tongue-in-cheek thing I think anyone's ever said, so I have no issues with that at all. But Sam, your thoughts so far? I think you're similar episodes to me.
Yeah, did you see Finn Russell in the press conference the other day? Because you have to remember, all of this was filmed and edited like a full year ago. So Finn Russell, like, they obviously forget half the stuff they've said in any of these interviews. There's entire tournaments and World Cups and everything have gone on. So Finn Russell said, like, he's like, Netflix stitched me up there. I don't even think he realized that was going to make the last cut when he said that. You know, it's probably one of 10 things he said jokingly. I liked it. It's rugby content, which is, to me, like, I'm just a content fiend. You know, anything you can get and watch, I really enjoy. The Ellis Genge stuff, I like Ellis Genge a lot. I know you don't as much, mainly because he's English, not really for anything other reason. But that Everybody's Game that him and Maro Itoje featuring, which I think is on Prime, which is about being black rugby player, is really, really good and really softens you to Ellis Genge. It's worth watching. I think Wessie's bang on with should probably be a little bit of a background, even things like Grand Slams and the Calcutta Cup, because it looks in the first episode like Scotland have won the feckin' tournament, which is weird. But overall, no, I really like it. I'm enjoying it because it's rugby content. My partner likes it. She made the point, though, that it's weird because it doesn't look like a match on TV. So if you are trying to sell rugby to other people, you know, the way like Drive to Survive or the tennis or the golf, you watch it and then you watch golf and you go, oh, yeah, this is it. But they use all these really cool, intricate, like framed video and pictures, but none of them are like your standard when I'm watching rugby on TV sort of pictures. They're these high drawing shots that follow Duane van der Merwe running down the pitch. That's not what you see as a fan. So it's, I think it needs to do a bit more of the representing rugby. But like that Drive to Survive took 2, 3, even 4 years before it kind of got as good as it's been. So hopefully it's the start of something, and hopefully teams open up. I know the Irish team were against letting too much access in last year, which means Scotland and Italy featured a lot heavier. So hopefully the Irish team kind of, and the French teams and stuff, let a bit more access in, and we get more, because more content for rugby, more eyeballs on the sport is just good for it, especially with the Six Nations being the way it is.
Yeah, I think I was expecting almost zero Irish content, just because of how all the reports that they gave them pretty much nothing. So I was pleasantly surprised at what we did get, even like chatting to Andy Farrell and all that, which was pretty good. I think Andy Farrell came across really well in it too, as a coach. But yeah, it's been good.
You said so, because you said you don't really like Genge, but you liked that episode, and you said, you don't think anyone dislikes Porter. I'd say everyone outside of Ireland dislikes Porter. Like, he's an abrasive character. He's probably the Irish kind of equivalent almost of Genge. You know, you see that, the bloody ears and the funny tattoos and the hair. I'd say there's a lot of players from outside of Ireland that are like, this lad's getting away with murder at the scrums. He's an abrasive character. He's pushing, he's shoving. So we're very myopic in the way we look at players and characters. We kind of go, oh, he's English, we don't like him. But the Irish equivalent is grand.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I was looking at through an Irish lens, but I will say this: the first thing my fiance did after we watched the Italy Ireland website was go straight to Sebastian Egri's girlfriend's Instagram to see if they did get engaged after that show, and they did. So congratulations to Sebastian Egri and his fiance. Now that was the main thing. I don't know if that's what Netflix were hoping to get out of that episode, but look at, you know. She has a new follower. That's all that matters. Right, let's look ahead to this coming Six Nations. We'll go through team by team, and we'll start off with the reigning champions. We'll go through the table from last year. That, of course, was Ireland winning the Grand Slam. 5 wins from 5. 20 scores tried. Only 6 conceded. Well, as many bonus points was there? Count 5. Two bonus points on top of that as well. Sorry, no, that's wrong. Apologies. 7 bonus points. I don't know if I'm getting those bonus points right. Who cares at the end of the day? But Ireland, sort of a similar squad as the last year. I don't think anyone expected that much different. The only kind of changes came through were mainly injury kind of motivated moves. But I suppose we'll go around and expect. What do you expect, Westy, from Ireland this year? You know, teams don't tend to go back to back. It's not often that happens, especially after a Grand Slam. Do you see this Irish team kind of, you know, kicking off where they left off, or would you see some regression?
I'm not expecting massive regression, to be honest. I mean, the team hasn't really changed enough to justify that. I guess you would have a bit of a concern about around the disappointment of the World Cup and how camp is going to be. And I guess my main concern is that you're starting away to France, who are, you know, in my opinion, are the other major competitor for the championship this year. And that's not to say that other teams can't win it, but I think that, you know, based off of the last 2 years, Ireland and France are kind of your best bet. And based off, you know, people say, oh, well, England got to the semi-final. But, you know, if you look at the opposition faced, I think everyone was in agreement that France and Ireland had a tougher run at it. I don't think a win is essential. I've often thought that the Six Nations after a World Cup is the least important, if that makes any sense. You know, it is a time, like look at Wales, look at England, it's a time to kind of rotate and bring newer players in. We're not doing that. That's fine. Not everything has to be a 4-year cycle. But I expect us to be there, thereabouts in the last weekend. I think the first weekend will tell a lot for us. And then I think with the fixtures that we have at home, you know, they're all games you'd expect to win. It's the away game to England that you think, okay, maybe if England build well, what is that? I think that's 3 weeks in. We play England at the second last game. Yeah, second last game. And then the games we have at home, we should definitely be winning, especially with the opposition that we're facing. Again, all really, really strong teams. But if they're coming to Dublin, we should have a slight advantage there. But yeah, I think, you know, I don't really expect another Grand Slam, to be honest. I do think, you know, I think we're strong enough that if we lose to France in the opening weekend, we can still, you know, finished the rest of the games quite strong. So, but if we beat France the opening round, I think Grand Slam is on the cards. But yeah, I guess I'm expecting us to be thereabouts come final weekend. I'm expecting us to be in with a shout. If we lost both away fixtures, let's say, or one of those home fixtures, I'd be pretty worried. Again, I say both, you know, one of the away fixtures, if we lost, fine. If we lost both of them, I'd be a little bit concerned. If we lost the home fixtures, I'd be quite concerned, I think.
Yes, Sam, with that being said, you know, as we said, there isn't a huge change in the squad, but in maybe the most important position and the most important player, Johnny Sexton is obviously retired now, no longer with the team. We expect Jack Crowley to now be the starting 10. Do we have to really consider how big of a factor that is, especially as West said, going away to France at the start? Like, Jack Crowley's still, you know, quite young. He's still very inexperienced when it comes to international rugby. Do we have to maybe, you know, put a bit of a limit on our expectations with that, or are we expecting him to hit the ground running?
I'd expect him to. He's confident enough, young lad. Like, you see the way he's played. I think he'll have mistakes in him. I don't think anyone's going to be as good or experienced as a 38-year-old Johnny Sexton. You know, he was the only 10 for 10 years, so it's very hard to replace that. But they've done the right thing, I think, with Crowley. And he's, to me, looks like the obvious choice right now. Rathburn, if he was fit and playing for Leinster and if they were going well, he might, you know, have a little bit of a claim to it. But otherwise, I don't think that there's anyone that's really put their hand up. Even Crowley this season has been hit and miss. But personally, I would have preferred to have seen a little bit more of him with Sexton, you know, kind of integrate him a little bit more than they did. But they had a World Cup that they had eyes on, and, you know, Sexton was the standard of player that he's been. But we saw last, was it November when he came, and he did very well coming in kind of out of the cold. So you're going to have to kind of hamper your expectations a little bit with him and just allow him to make a couple of mistakes, allow him to build into it, allow him to grow confidence. I think it'll be very telling on what they do around the two centres and the winger, just because Mac's out as well. And Mac takes a lot of pressure off the 10 when he's playing, because he comes in, he gets himself involved enough. And Nash does that a good bit with Munster too. But I think that you'll put Bundy outside him to really manage him through it and to help with the defensive side of things. And, you know, Bundy's constantly talking. Players are always saying, like, how vocal he is on the pitch. So that'll be important for him. But age-wise and experience-wise, yeah, he's less experienced. But, like, you know, France missed Ntamack and DuPont. You know, Ntamack's been out a good long time. But DuPont's kind of just gone here, and he's very talismanic for them, the way that they play. And he's probably the best player in the world. So they have their excuse ready as well. I think that bodes well for Ireland as well as for France, because it allows for a little bit of leniency in terms of, like, it's not going to be the most perfect one. Both teams are nursing a hangover after that quarterfinal exit. So it's an interesting first game up. I think I like the fact that it's away in France. I think it gives, you know, Ireland an opportunity to maybe go to France and just try and get a monkey off their back in terms of what happened in the quarterfinal there. Try and get rid of that hoodoo about it and put them in good stead if they do get a win. I'd love to see, and I could be very wrong with this, I haven't actually looked up the stats, but it seems to me like Grand Slams are very common these days. I'd love to see, like, you know, a couple of years without a Grand Slam, teams knocking each other down and, you know, winning just on the league table for a couple of times to make that Grand Slam, like, I was like, oh wow, Ireland really pushed for that Grand Slam this time, or France or England really pushed for that Grand Slam this time. So a couple of years where all the teams just take points off each other for a while and it comes back to more of a condensed table, I think would be excellent for the tournament. And it would really, I think it would make a Grand Slam a bit more special. I think from the outside, I know, talking to people who aren't as into rugby, if Ireland won the Six Nations but they didn't get a Grand Slam, people would actually caveat the fact that they won the Six Nations, but it wasn't the Grand Slam, though. They still lost to France or they still lost to England. I think that if that became the norm again, it would make for a much more interesting tournament. So having DuPont out, Ntamack not back yet for France, you know, Crowley and Mack out, England have dropped a few players and brought in, I think all the other teams brought in some uncapped players. Having that in, it might, even though it's not wholesale the way maybe would have looked for in the past, I think it does still make for an interesting kind of transition period between that last World Cup and this next cycle.
Yeah, just look up there. There's been 4 Grand Slams in the last 6 years. Five in the last.
Okay, I wasn't wrong. I had a feeling, but I wasn't wrong.
Yeah, Ireland, France had the last year. Then there was 2 years in a row where there wasn't one. Wales and England, and then Wales and Ireland back in 2018 were Grand Slam winners. But looking at the Irish squad as well, especially in the backs, Westies, where we're seeing probably the biggest changes, Calvin Nash coming in Exciting player from Munster. Jacob Stockdale back in from Ulster after a couple of kind of years out in the cold. And Jordan Larmore from D4, as Zebos calls him. He's back in as well. Surprisingly high number of caps actually for Ireland. Jordan Larmore, he's 30 caps. Which I wouldn't have him penciled in for. But the likes of Calvin Nash, do you expect to see much from him in this kind of Six Nations campaign, Westy? Or are you expecting him there more as an experience, kind of to gather some experience?
No, I'm kind of expecting to see a good bit of Calvin Nash, I think. I think at the minute, in my mind anyway, and again, someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but he's probably the most likely to step in for Mac. I think the last few weeks will go against Stockdale, to be brutally honest. And yeah, I think Nash is probably the front runner for, to not take Mac's position, but to be, I think Nash and Lowe are probably your most likely to start. On the wing, I don't really know. Larmer maybe. But yeah, in my head, it's kind of Nash. He has been more involved in the last, let's say, 12 months than Larmer. I know Larmer's coming from experience, but then I think Nash is kind of the new exciting prospect, I suppose. It's interesting going to France, I suppose. You can see Farrell going with Larmer, going with that bit more experience maybe, but
Ringrose
on the wing, yeah, big fan of centres on the wing, but I think you're more likely to see someone like Henshaw at 23 and Ringrose moving out to 11 or whenever it is, 14, rather than starting there. I would be more excited maybe to see Nash start the game and start Larmer. I would have a small bit of concern, this is exactly kind of how Mac got started. There's a couple of injuries and Mac got called in and got started. No one expected him to. And had this kind of meteoric rise. So while Mac is still young, there's a lot of years ahead of him, these shoulder injuries can kind of reoccur. So I would hope that it's not going to be a long-term change, but I think someone like Nash was right there in the World Cup squad up until they went to France. So Farrell obviously sees something that he likes in him, and I'd be excited to see how he fits into an Ireland squad. I think he is he's a really good finisher. He's a strong ball carrier, and I guess, and again, someone will show me a video of me being wrong, but in my mind, he's kind of the best defensively of the three of Larmer and Stockdale, I think. So that might just be a personal preference on me preferring the way he plays. But yeah, I expect to see quite a lot of Calvin Nash, I think, in the Six Nations is the answer to your question.
Sam, the forwards, not too many new faces. Jeremy Lachman has come in. We see Tom O'Toole back in as well, and Nick Timoney on the kind of outskirts. But there's a lot of talk so far of Joe McCarthy potentially pushing for that starting jersey for Friday evening. What are your thoughts on that? As him potentially coming up and grabbing that starting jersey?
I wouldn't be disappointed to see it because he's impressed all year, and I think he's got that size and profile that we want. But I don't think it happens for this one. I think he goes with Ryan and Byrne because Peter O'Mahony's captain, so he's obviously got the sixth jersey. You're not going to knock Van der Fleer off and move Peter O'Mahony across. And the Doris is one of the top eights in the world. He's the best in eight in Ireland at the moment anyway. So that's your back. That's your back three. And I think James Ryan and Ty Byrne are your second row. Is if he does come in, I think it's for James Ryan, which will probably annoy a couple of the people that want to see him beside James Ryan. But I just think Ty Byrne is integral to a lot of what we do. And defensively and in breakdown situations, Ty Byrne is so, so important. And James Ryan looks like he's quite important in terms of your lineout, but Peter O'Mahony covers that. So that's, I think that McCarthy will get his game in the Six Nations and will probably do a lot to make himself a starter, but I just don't see it against France. I would be pleasantly surprised if he does, because I think he's a class player, and I'd like to see what happens if you gave someone with that raw ability and that kind of that youthful exuberance the opportunity. I'm really excited for potentially seeing him and Baird on the pitch at the same time against maybe Italy or Wales, if we're going to call Wales one of those bottom two teams now, because that could be very exciting and that could change the dynamic in how Ireland play. But going into this, I don't think Farrell is the tinker man kind of type. I think he'll go with what he knows and go with what he trusts. The biggest, if there was to be a change, I think it'd probably be Henderson, not McCarthy for this one, because I know he's trust and a lot of trust and experience with Henderson. So it'll be Joe McCarthy's Six Nations. I think he'll almost be the starter by the end of it. But for this France game, I don't think he starts. I mean, definitely on the bench, though. And if they went, potentially, because Frawley's in the squad, they went with 6-2 split, maybe you could have the opportunity to have more forwards on in on the bench and get, you know, wholesale changes, get McCarthy in there, get Baird in even if you wanted as well. So there's a lot of options, even though we've not changed too drastically, because Frawley opens it up for you, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. It wouldn't upset me to see him starting, because he's that good, and he is the future of that position. You'd probably be looking at him for the next World Cup. I know we're so far out, but that seems to be the trajectory he's on easily. With that being said, we can move on to our next team, which is France. They came second last year, losing only to us. 4 wins from 5. Westy, Sam obviously mentioned already, no Ntamack, no Antoine Dupont, who's, I think, universally agreed as the best player in the world. And I would say, obviously, to most squads, that would obliterate a team. But France are so crazy deep and so crazy and talented. We've seen the emergence of Jalibert in the Champions Cup, how good he is. Do you see them still being massive favourites for this, or is losing two players of that, you know, calibre too much to overcome?
I don't think it's too much to overcome. I think they have, as you said, they've got great depth. They, as much as you can say, maybe they, you know, they rely on Dupont and Ntamack. Like, losing Ntamack off the World Cup was obviously a big blow, but Jalibert stepped in and was fantastic in the games that he played. You know, and then, you know, I think any team would be really reliant on Dupont. I don't think it's not the same, maybe, as having like some kind of big talisman who motivates the whole squad. It's just more about Dupont being a freak athlete, and being that good. So I think they've built depth pretty well over the last few years. I think they'll be, you know, relatively confident. It's a home game for them. They've built this new attitude about the national squad where they just didn't have for a few years. You know, for a while it kind of, you know, it was all about the clubs, and the top 14 is still kind of their be all and end all. But Fabien Galthié has kind of brought back this love for the national team, and he's invested that in the youth. We saw it in the last World Cup, the way it was kind of handed over to a younger generation. And then, you know, 4 years ago, not a lot of people were talking about Antoine Dupont. Now he's kind of the first name on everybody's lips. So I think they have a decent system feeding back in. I think Maxime Lucu has been pretty impressive when he played. I used to not rate him, but I think I saw enough kind of in the World Cup to kind of change my mind on it. I guess it's more about developing that partnership at national level, you know, for their 9 and 10. But if you look at the squad that they have, you know, they still have Fiku, who, you know, there's great insight on Gael Fiku in the Full Contact documentary, if you get that episode. Still have the likes of Dante, still have the likes of Ramos, you know, Peno is still there. Like, these are the guys who were huge, huge playmakers in their game. And that forward pack is still so massive and so aggressive. I think it's kind of no harm for them to experience life without Dupont, Six Nations without Dupont. In their building, in their kind of maintaining, because I think even though the last World Cup didn't go the way they wanted to, the squad is still young, right? They still have a decent chance of carrying that form forward. I think it's a chance to catch them a little bit cold, but I don't think it's an overly weakened France squad. I think, well, any team losing Dupont is weakened, but I think they have enough danger around the pitch that they'll be able to. They've always diversified their attack, so I think they'll maintain a diverse attack.
Yes, Sam, home to Ireland and home to England, which I think would probably most people agree are the two biggest, you know, threats, I suppose. Any French team, especially in the last couple of years, they're looking to win both those games, and they're looking at a Grand Slam even without those two players, just because of those home games, of how strong France are at home.
Yeah, and I love that they're doing them in Marseille and Lyon as well. It's not just all Paris. You'd love to see Ireland maybe with the opportunity to diversify and where they play, moving around the country a bit. But I think
bring them to sports ground, see how good they are. You know what I mean?
Having England and Ireland at home will definitely benefit France in this one. I think they'll probably feel the same way we do, and a bit hungover after that World Cup. They went out the same, and they'll probably feel a little bit more aggrieved as well, just the manner of that South Africa game. They were so close. Lucu, like Westy said, you know, I didn't think much of him, but maybe that was unfair on him. Maybe it's kind of like sub-keeper syndrome, where you don't see any of them because Dupont was so integral to the way they play that, you know, there was no second best. If you look at what France are doing now, imagine 4 years ago, Sexton went off and played sevens for a year, and someone like Rothburn or Billy Burns or Crowley or someone got that opportunity for 1 year to just to do this. Lucu's 31 now, so maybe it won't benefit them in the long run in terms of a successor DuPont, but it'll change the way they do it. Might give Jalibert a little bit more opportunity to play. It might give them as a whole an idea of taking a little bit of the stress off DuPont. So it could be a really successful kind of operation for them with DuPont going off for the year. I think they'll look at it as a Grand Slam opportunity, though. If they can get past Ireland in the first round, I think they'll kind of feel home and hosed. You're only kind of hoping for some sort of upset with maybe a Scotland that want to prove a point. We hear that every year, so I'm not really going to take too much notice of it until they actually do beat someone. And then Wales with just Gatland. I always, even though they're crap and they're decimating players and all their players are leaving and playing second division French rugby or Japanese rugby now, I still just worry about Gatland's ability to actually do something and upset people, because he's such an arsehole in terms of his ability to coach teams into winning games. So that would maybe be your stumbling block, the away game to Wales. But all in all, I think if France get this weekend, they probably feel like they can go all the way. And I don't know if they'll have to get out of third gear, just the state of the other teams in the competition. That's could bite me in the backside now when Ireland could come fifth and all these other teams could do well. But I'm looking at the French squad here, and I was 100% sure Antonio retired after the World Cup. Is he unretired, or did I get that wrong? Or I don't know, because I'm seeing him in the squad list there, and I thought for sure there was a big swan song about him finishing up, but maybe I'm wrong.
I do feel that is, you know, sparking something, but I saw him in the squad as well, so maybe he was convinced to give it one more year.
Maybe they're like, DuPont's out, you play nine.
Oh man, that would be great. Just looking here at the online betting, France are 3-point favourites over Ireland on Friday night, which at home is really not much, so it shows you the respect still that Ireland have in terms of their, you know, the defence. Okay, that's France. We'll move on to third place, which was Scotland. They won 3 of their 5 games. A pretty good showing for Scotland. But Westie, again, it's sort of, they're just sort of, they're not a bad team, but then they're also not really good enough to go and win it either. We saw in the documentary kind of how they kind of psyched themselves up. But I don't know, is this another year of hearing that Scotland might go ahead and cause a couple of upsets? Or are we actually going to see that come to fruition this year?
Well, it depends what you mean. I mean, them beating England in Twickenham last year was a bit of an upset, I think, as far as most people are concerned. I think it's an interesting squad. There's the likes of, I think, like Magnus Bragbury, as far as I know, was left out of the squad. Obviously, you have, Stuart Hogg retired before the World Cup, so he's not available. I think it's probably the first Six Nations without Stuart Hogg would be interesting. I think they'll be pretty disappointed overall with the World Cup, especially kind of maybe the manner in which they lost to us. They have been building for a while. Gregor's been there for a while. He should have a good cohesiveness with the squad. I think they will view, like, I don't think them winning the Six Nations is too likely, but when you think about the fact that England are a squad in transition and Wales are a squad in transition, there's games there that they can target. There's games that they'll definitely see as winnable, as maybe more winnable than other years. It's a tough start away to Wales. Again, I do say a Wales in transition, but it's a Wales team that that if they're ever going to be vulnerable, is vulnerable. But I've always said that Wales under Gatland are a different team. You know, they're almost like a fifth franchise team in that regard. And then having Scotland come, having France come to Scotland, then the week after, it would be an interesting one as well. I mean, they beat France in the warm up to the World Cup. Now again, it was a heavily rotated France, but they won't massively fear France coming to them. They'll see that again as an opportunity to maybe. I don't think they'll win it, but a chance to kind of get out and to maybe give a bit of a shock and a bit of an upset maybe. But I think you're looking at a squad where most of the key players are all kind of around the 30 cap mark. They're bringing in some young talent. You know, if you're Stafford McDowell there from Glasgow Warriors, has been playing well. Even like Ben White's on 20 caps, you know, Duhan van der Meer is 35 caps. Like these guys have been in that system and in the Six Nations for 2 or 3 years now, is what I mean. So there's a lot of experience in that squad, a lot of cohesion. And I do think at a point you have to start thinking, if not now, then when? You know, if you're not going to capitalize on this generation of players, it could be another long spell of hurt. But in my mind, it's what qualifies capitalizing. You know, is third place, is a competitive, is being in it in the last weekend, is that enough to be a successful tour for Scotland? I'm not sure. I'm not sure my definition of a successful Scotland is the same as Scotland's definition of a successful Scotland, is the roundabout point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, no, it's a strange one because, like Sam, walk me through here the hypothetical. They're home to France. Say they cause an upset, you never know. They're home to England, and then they are away to Ireland on the last day of the Six Nations. You know, there is a possibility there where they are heading over to Ireland after causing some upsets, and while they'll still be underdogs against that Irish team, that last round, you never know, anything can happen. Am I being delusional here as a Scot for Scottish fans, or do you think that's actually, possible?
I think you're being delusional. We hear it most years. We hear, oh, Scotland can cause this upset. And yeah, they probably can, but they don't very often. And it's the downside to Scotland and where they are. I think that they do need some sort of kick up the hole. Big omission leaving Hamish Watson out. I think that's, personally, I think that's a mistake. He's the type of player, the passion he brings to the position, I think is one of those undroppable things. Sort of the way we looked at Peter O'Mahony for quite some time, we kind of said, maybe he's not in our starting team, but I just would always have him around. And if he was available, I'd always pick him because I think he brings something that's maybe a level above actual ability. And actually, he's just the type of player that he is. So that could backfire. They're trying to change it up. I think they brought in, was it your man Hepburn, who had played a couple of games for England about 4 or 5 years ago. They've a couple of props in, they've a Leicester prop in as well. So they've made some changes, but I don't see it being enough to upset them. I think that we're relatively the same team, maybe just barring Johnny Sexton and Mack, and they're relatively the same team as what was in the World Cup and what was in last year and the World Cup 4 years previous to that. I don't see them having stepped up yet. I don't think that they're out of it 2 weeks to go. They have the opportunity and the potential to be in the mix and to cause an upset and to potentially beat a France, but it'd be very Scotland to beat a France and then just lose to Wales or lose to Italy. So I think it would be delusional to think that they're genuine contenders for it right now. That being said, I would actually love to see them be genuine contenders. I'd love to see them going into the last week with an opportunity to play for it, would, take a scalp and to get a result, because it's getting a bit annoying talking about this every year, saying like, oh, Scotland have the chance to give us an upset and then they don't. I'd love to actually say, oh, well, they did give us an upset, and we'd have to think about them. I think 9 times out of 10, Ireland can play a rotated, not a fully rotated team, but they can make 4 or 5 changes for a Scotland game and still be confident enough they're going to win it. Scotland have a lot of good players, but I just don't see them as being as good a team as Ireland.
Yeah, I think you make a very good point where like they can do it one weekend, like last year beating England, and you're like, oh, here we go, this is it. And then they don't beat Ireland or beat. They can't do it week in, week out, I think, against the top teams. Now, maybe they will this year, and that'll be clipped. And by all means, but go ahead. But the way the fixtures fall, it's not the worst kind of year for them. So who knows? They'll be there or thereabouts, even for the second or third position, maybe. Okay, moving on to fourth place last year, which was England. Really, really poor Six Nations for them last year. Steve Borthwick obviously only got the job, whatever it was, like a month before Eddie Jones' saga. And it looked like a team that just had got a head coach a month before. They were sort of all over the place. But Westy, World Cup semi-final, albeit, didn't really beat anyone good to get there. But still, can they use that now as fuel, a bit more time under Borthwick? I don't think we're going to see as a poor of England this year as we did last year, right?
No, I don't think so. I think you're right. I think a little bit more time under Borthwick for kind of systems and styles to take hold will improve them. Like you can say they didn't have to beat anybody major in a World Cup, but I mean, I think they kind of showed tactically why they're dangerous in the World Cup. They only lost to South Africa by one score. Now, as did a lot of people, but that's impressive. And even the first game, I think the first game against Argentina, really set down a marker in that, like, we're willing to not play the conventional brand of rugby, and we're going to get results by doing it. So I think that have continued to grow. I think there's quite a few, no more than everybody else. I think that's the kind of theme across this year's Six Nations is the someone put up a picture during a week of like Hogg, Wyn Jones, Sexton, Owen Farrell. I don't know, was it Sergio Parisse maybe from anyways, one of those group shots of the Six Nations kick off against, like, none of these guys are involved this year. So I think it every team has that like one or two big tallies man that have kind of moved on. You know, it'll be interesting to see how they are without Farrell. Again, I thought Courtney Laws was great the last weekend, the weekend before last in the Heineken Cup. So it'll be interesting to see how they are without him. I think Jamie George is quite a good appointment at captain. I think he, by all accounts, he's quite a popular guy in the squad. He's got quite a lot of experience, and it should kind of help some of the younger lads coming through. We said Finn Smith was in, I think you guys said that last week, which is really interesting. I really hope to see him get some game time because, well, I've seen him play once. I thought he was class. So how fickle does that make me? But yeah, again, you know, England, same as they've got us at home, at home from their perspective, which is what they would want. Starting off this weekend away in Italy, okay, Italy away will be tricky, but again, starting off with Italy is theoretically the easiest way to start. And then, yeah, I think away to France in the last weekend, I think, will almost definitely be a bridge too far for them either way, no matter how what way the tournament goes. But I think they'll have improved. I don't think they're going to be the funnest team to watch, but they will have drastically improved from the last Six Nations. I don't quite consider them title contenders. I may eat those words, but they, you know, if you lower your expectations of England as a whole, they're probably going to be good for an upset, I think.
Yeah, no, agreed. Sam, do we think this is Marcus Smith team going forward, or do we expect to see Finn Smith emergence after his sort of heroic display a couple of weeks ago against Munster, or is this Marcus Smith's team and no one else's?
It's George Ford's team. It's not Marcus Smith's team. It's George Ford's team. I think Marcus Smith gets more time at fullback than he does at 10. I'd love to see a Marcus Smith team, but I think Ford has been actually arguably better than Farrell in the last while. So Farrell moving on, I think just frees it up for Ford to be picked, because Farrell was so integral to a lot of the way they played, not just on the pitch, but he was such a character and such a captain. So I think that they'll go with Ford. He's more trustworthy in terms of that position. Personally, if I was a coach, I'd put a Marcus Smith in and try and get the team going, and then Finn Smith for that youth and exuberance. Like Westie, I've only seen him once or twice, but I was impressed with him last week for sure. He really put Munster to the sword in really trying conditions, which says a lot about the character of him. He didn't seem fazed by kicking from 55 yards in the pissing rain when they were chasing the game. He seemed to manage the game well. He kicked well. So he's a good upside. You want to get him into that team as much as possible, you know, potentially this Italy game this weekend, it being the opening, you might not change it or rotate it as much as you'd like. But I think Italy away is a nice one to start for a team that's maybe, you know, building on the confidence of the World Cup, but still questionable in terms of where they're at. It's almost like a rugby tour. You do a bit of bonding and you probably get a handy enough fixture. I know Benetton are going well this year and Italy are improving, but it's still, you'd want to think, a winnable game. So that might stand to Borthwick and the team. They might get away, you know, get a really positive result and positive experience being away this weekend. He's also six caps. He's doing a bit of a change in the guard, unlike Ireland. You know, Sinclair out. He's not been playing well at all, and rumour is moving to France. And Billy Van Pola out, probably well overdue at this point. But it's interesting to see where they've gone with it. You know, they're bringing through some youth. They're bringing through some players. I think your man from Exeter, who's been impressive all year, is Ethan Roots. He's a New Zealander, played Maori, played for the Maori All Blacks. He's class. So I don't know if they're contenders yet, but like what Westie said, I think they're going to have a big say in the tournament. You know, we have to go there, which is huge for us. If we're chasing, you know, if we beat France this weekend, France will be looking at that England game as the opportunity for them to catch us back up. They're going to think that England away will be our hardest test after them. So if we do beat France this weekend, that England test will be massive for us to try and get, you know, push on for a Grand Slam, or for France looking to try and catch up with us. And then other than that, they could put it to France, or they could put it to Scotland. I don't think they have it in them to get five games and go on to win it. But I said that about them in the World Cup, and they pushed on as far as possible there. So it's a hard one to put your kind of finger on, because I think, like Westie said, they're not going to be enjoyable to watch. They're going to be a Borthwick team. They're going to be hard to beat, which will make it very hard to go there, which is, it's the harder year for us going there and France.
Yeah, it's, yeah. I don't know. I never know what England, you mentioned Billy Vinopola. God, like every time I've seen him play in the last year, he's just looked not great. Looked like a player didn't want to be there, and it's just kind of mistake after mistake. So probably, as you said, about time to move on from him. But I don't know.
I thought he was about 37. Sorry.
Yeah, I know. I think his body is 44. You know what I mean? Like, that's just the way it is. But
brothers are 90.
Yeah,
and I exactly. really like, sorry, that Exeter winger they have is a Faye Waboso that they brought in. He was supposed to play for Wales, but he's studying in Exeter University to become a doctor. So I think he decided to play for England instead. I think he's class. His highlights reel. I don't watch Premiership too often, but I see him on highlights all the time, and he looks electric. So he could be interesting to see how they bring him into the game. And then we said the other day, Westy, myself and yourself, were saying we're really impressed with Alex Mitchell. So I'm talking myself into actually saying the England are a lot better than I thought. To be honest, going through some of the players they have, they're stacked. I reckon they're favourites. Well,
it was the same as last year, though. Like, it was never the talent that was a question. You know what I mean? They always have great players. It's just putting it all together. And if is Borthwick the right man to do that? I agree with your Bogart sentiment. I agree with Bogart's sentiment that they're going to be really hard to beat. And as Wes said, probably not great to watch. But at the end of the day, South Africa aren't always great to watch either. And they're double world champions. So moving on to fifth place, Wales. One win from five. Again, Gatlin came in shortly before the tournament, and they were poor. They were all over the place. I don't know what to really expect from Wales. Westy, you know, the clubs aren't doing great. Gatland, who knows about him really at the end of the day. Is it going to be another potential fifth place finish for Wales here, or are you expecting a bit of a renaissance?
I think it's most likely it's another... Well, they've Scotland first at home as well, which kind of, if they get that win against Scotland, I mean, they're probably going to come third or fourth, rather. I think Wales are probably the most exciting, the most interesting to look at. As I said earlier, Wales under Gatland have always been a different animal. Like, there's previous seasons where the Welsh regions haven't been doing great, and Wales have gone on and won a Grand Slam off the back of it. Like, so it's a tough one to quantify and to know what to expect. I think when you look at their squad, okay, there's a good few lads on around 30 caps or 20 caps or that area, but there's a lot of inexperience. There's a lot of new lads coming in, a good few uncapped guys, maybe not quite as many as England have maybe in the backs, but young guys. Even is it Daffod Jenkins is the captain? He's in his early 20s. It very much strikes of a team, you know. Okay, so we've mentioned about World Cup cycles and building to the next World Cup. It very much strikes as a team that is building for the next World Cup. I think it is worth remembering that Wales had some fantastic results in the World Cup. I mean, that win over, okay, not a great performing Australia team, but a very strong win there, was very, very impressive. So I think Gatland, it's been said before, Gatland has this ability to get something out of particularly Welsh players, more so than they do in their week-in, week-out clubs. I think, again, I'd say similar to what you said about England, I don't think rugby talent in Wales has ever been a problem. I don't think they have any problem producing players. It's, I suppose, you know, last year it was more around the bureaucracy, the finances of running the clubs and getting everybody paid and stuff like that, that might have hindered their preparation a little bit. But other than that, again, it's still quite a strong team. You still have the likes of Adams, the likes of Tompkins and Owen Watkin, you know, the likes of Will Rowlands and is it Adam Beard as well in the pack. Like, they're still pretty strong, pretty good leaders within that squad. There's just a lot of unknowns in terms of whether some of their less experienced players will make the step up. You know, I always hate the phrase like unproven at international level. Like, how else are you going to prove yourself unless you play at international level? You know, you have to do it. So, I think they're the most interesting. They're the ones I'll be watching probably, well, outside of Ireland, with the most kind of individual interest on players to see how people adapt to it. But yeah, as I said, I don't think talent is the issue. It's just a phasing out of the old guard, I guess, that they're kind of right bang in the middle of now.
Yeah, Sam, what are your thoughts on Wales ahead of Six Nations?
I'm wary because it's Gatland. I think Gatland is good at winning tournaments. He's proven time and time again that that's the case. But a lot of the Welsh fans don't seem to think this iteration of Gatland is the same as the one before he moved away and started coaching in New Zealand. So it's hard to know. He's done a good bit of change. And even before the World Cup, he was already cycling the changes. And people kind of hypothesized that maybe he was actually looking towards the next World Cup and getting those players in. The likes of Daffod Jenkins heard today that he's the second youngest Welsh captain of all time behind Sam Warburton. So that's, you know, it's good company to be in. They can build with a young captain like that. It's always good for a young team to have a young captain kind of relates to them. It's not like you have a bunch of 21, 22-year-old coming in and listening to a 38-year-old lad barking orders at them who's been there, done that. They're all kind of growing together. Reece Amott will be a huge loss for them. He's a star. He's a stud, and they have utilized him a lot. He's gotten them out of a lot of holes in the last few years, so they'll look to try and replace that. But I like what they're doing in terms of youth, and I think that it's a slightly enviable position because there's not much expected of them that they can do this. I think Ireland being Grand Slam champions, not getting through the quarterfinal, having the age profile that we do, Farrell was never going to wholesale change it, and he was never going to be enabled to do that. Their whole domestic rugby, everything is going so poorly that they have almost carte blanche to do what they'd like, and that makes for an interesting proposition because they could lift the entire place. You know, Cardiff have just recently got an investment. There's a couple of players there they'll probably look to bring back, bring in from England. The likes of that, Daffy Jenkins, he's going to have to move from Exeter if he's going to, because of their 25 cap rule. So it's a funny situation that Wales find themselves in here because they're so little expected of them. I think they wouldn't be enabled to do it, and they could cause an upset, and they could look to really put some pressure on some teams, get some big wins, and, you know, ride the crest of a positive wave if they get themselves going from the start. So I would never write off Wales, especially under Gatland, because of how impressive they've been in the last 15 years around the Six Nations and around Gatland and all the players they have. But if you were to be very honest, you look at it and go, they're still in transition, they don't have much chance. But I think that actually gives them more opportunity to play. There's not as much pressure on them. You know, Ireland are pretty much looking to win this tournament because we're not making any changes. We have no uncapped players in the main squad. We have a couple in that wider, whatever they call it, training panel thing. But you're bringing in five uncapped players. There's already a bunch of lads left or retired during the World Cup or post World Cup or whatever it is. They've got an opportunity now to not, they don't have that pressure of having to win.
Yeah. Yeah, be interesting to follow. Last but probably least, we have Italy. 0 wins from 5 wooden spoons. The stat of in the dock again, where they've only won, 13 matches from 100? I can't remember. Even I was shocked by that, and I know how much they sucked. But Jet Westy, it's always there, isn't it? It's always like, I want them to be good. I love so many of their players. Lamero always, I love everything about him. Capuzzo is world class. Negri as well, like he's you know, he's always plays really, really well, plays really hard. Like, I suppose I could ask you why they just can't seem to get it going, but do you expect another wooden spoon for Italy this year, or is there still a glimmer of hope? Because you love Italy more than anyone, I would say. Are you hoping, you're obviously hoping, but what are you expecting from Italy, I suppose, is a fair question.
It's so funny because I genuinely thought they were doing really well under Crowley, but obviously the World Cup was pretty disappointing from all angles. You can't really hide from it. I think they have a good squad. I think they have a good squad that's still relatively young. I mean, the likes of Paolo Garibisi is only about 23, you know, and he's got 31 caps already for Italy. I think everyone loves Negri after the if they've seen that full Colic episode. Capuozzo, obviously Montioni's playing really well for Leon. I probably expect them not to do great this season, but because they have a new head coach this season. Anybody who hasn't got to the end of full contact, sorry, spoiler alert, Kieran Crowley is not currently the head coach of Italy. It's Gonzalo Caseda. So his kind of real claim to fame as a coach, he's coached all over the world. He's coached in France. He's coached at home, but he coached the Jaguares, which were the Argentinian Super Rugby franchise. And he took them over. I think he took them over the year he took them over. They got to the final of Super Rugby. They played the Crusaders in New Zealand. I'm almost 100% sure he was the coach. I'm not sure if that was the year he took over or if he took over a year before. But the kind of idea is he is great at taking underperforming teams and getting more out of them. And I think even when you look at Italy for years, they've always had a mix of players around the top 14, around the Premiership. They haven't always had 30 great players, but they've always had a field of decent, of pretty great players. And I think as well, with the fact that Benetton are doing so well in the URC, is definitely going to help too. But it's about maximizing the talent that they have and getting the best out of these players. and kind of, you know, yeah, I suppose cracking the whip a little bit with them. So I believe it's the same backroom staff. I don't think he's replaced everybody in the back just yet. But I think in, you know, a new coach can bring in new systems, and you know, it could take them a while to get into that. But I've seen enough over the last 2 years to kind of reaffirm that point of it's not, again, it's not 100% a talent issue. It's not that there isn't great players available to them. It's finding a way to get the best out of them and building a strong national team culture. So I think the change you got, although I'm a big fan of Kieran Crowley, I know you can't really say World Cup aside, but I thought he was building well across the two Six Nations he had them for. You know, they were one carry away from beating Scotland until they got turned over and Scotland ran the pitch. But yeah, I think it'll be an interesting reign of a new coach, and I think that's the important thing to keep in mind. There may be another small step backwards. There may be a new coach bounce, but it is a new system that they're trying to take on under Gonzalo Quesada. So I think it's, again, I know I said maybe Wales the most interesting watch at the individual level, but I think I hope, I'm optimistic that this is a new era for Italy. And what that means yet, I don't know. It could be a new era that's very similar to the last few eras. But I would hope that there is at least not obviously not a championship coming, but more frequent wins and more visible growth as a national team on the horizon for them. I'm optimistic about the new coach, is the answer to the question.
It's great. I think we're all hoping that's the case. Sam, do Italy, do they should they be more batshit crazy, or should they go the Borthwick route of being super boring? Should they hire Borthwick maybe next year and become super boring Italy? Is that going to win them more games, or should they just double down and be apps like a sevens team?
Well, I think statistically in top level rugby, the team that kicks the most is the team that wins. So I unfortunately, it's not the more that I like watching it because I'm into rugby and I'm into the tactic side of things. But I think for your outside viewers, the more interesting version of rugby, the more expansive version of rugby is not necessarily the winning type of rugby. So maybe becoming a little more boring and a little more understanding of how to see out and win games is what Italy need to do if they're going to win. Gonzalo, I thought it was Quesadilla. Sorry, Westy, I said Quesada, but I looked it up earlier because he was the Stade coach when Connacht beat Stade here in the Champions Cup about two years ago, was it? Laumappi didn't play, much to my disdain. He was supposed to travel and didn't. And that ruined my entire watching Stade Francais get beaten in the sports ground experience. But yeah, he should do well with them. I think if he brings in a level of structure that Italy have kind of craved the last while and have been getting better at, and just continue to grow and try and, you know, scrape a win or two. And like I said earlier, squeeze down the dispersion in terms of who's the top and who's the bottom in the Six Nations would be more interesting for everyone watching. And it would give less opportunity for people like me to say that we need relegation promotion. I'm going to firmly believe that from forever. But there's a lot of commentators that are like, oh, we have to let Italy do their thing. And it's like, yeah, but I want to see them actually do it because I'm sick of just one win. I'm sick of no wins for a couple of years. I'd love to see them more competitive, getting one or two wins every year and really cause upsets and create more of a league structure where bonus points are integral. Benetton being as successful this year as they are and growing there from strength to strength. There's a lot of that Benetton team are in this Italy squad, which you love to see. I love what's the center, Brex. I'm a huge fan of his, and I think Italy, you know, banking on players the likes of him and then the Capozzo and the Montewanis, those really really high top level players, Negri's there. There, where Italy can win, and then bringing up that floor in terms of their wider squad. I still think they're going to get wooden spoon this year, unfortunately. Having said all that, I don't see where they get their win. If Wales fail to do what I said they could do, and if they are as bad as maybe it looks on paper, they could scrape another win against Wales or, you know, Scotland are always there for beating. I'm just gonna just punching down at Scotland constantly, but I don't see them beating England, Ireland, or France. So it's hard for them. I think Benetton have proven that the Italians can and are capable of fighting on a good front. Zebre are also a little bit better this year, which is great. You know, I don't think they're as bad as Dragons. So that's actually something, a positive to take from this URC. I still think you go at the end of the Six Nations, and unfortunately, that's a wooden spoon for Italy. And everyone talks about how good they were for a good couple of minutes, or how they nearly beat France, but then France scored two tries in the last 5 minutes and still got a bonus point win. That's the sort of stuff you constantly kind of hear and have with Italy, and until they consistently don't do that, it's going to be the same conversations.
Yeah, even the Netflix doc, you know, the Sebastian Agri episode where like they score a try and it's this big moment, and then it just casually shows England scoring two more tries. it's just like glosses over.
It's like 33-10.
It wasn't even close. Also, you heard there first, people. Sam loves Brexit. He loves Brexit, is what he said, and has been a big fan of it ever since day one.
Always.
Brexit means Brexit.
Juan Ignacio Brexit.
Yeah, what a name. Okay, we will wrap up with some predictions. Just winners, guys. Who's going to win this year's Six Nations, and will it be a Grand Slam? I can kick us off. I think Ireland will win it, but I don't think it'll be a Grand Slam. I think we lose to France this weekend, but then we win the rest of the games, and we somehow manage to win Six Nations.
Who beats France in your situation?
I think England's going to beat France. I fear England because they're just bloody English, aren't they? They're just going to... It's just going to be annoying.
I can confirm that the English
Well, yeah. You see half of Scotland's squad is not Scottish or born Scotland. That's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, I don't buy into the born-in thing, but because, you know, I wasn't born in Ireland. I think when you're born is just nothing to do with anything. It's where you feel you're from. But I think that there's a lot of the Scottish team played and were brought through in a system outside of Scotland. It was all through the English system, and it's hard for them because they're on the same landmass, so it's not as easy to say that. But yeah, it is from a Scottish point of view. You would only have two pro teams. I don't know, I'm just talking to myself now at this stage.
Yeah, I think that's probably most of the time, Sam. During the day you talk to yourself. Do you ever talk back to yourself though? That's the first sign apparently of going crazy.
Oh, I'm forever having conversations.
Oh, so okay.
Sometimes I'm having internal monologues, and when someone walks into my vicinity, I just start verbalising it.
Yeah, that probably makes sense. Okay, I'm going for Ireland, non-Grand Slam winners. Westy?
I want to be different, but yeah, I kind of agree. I think I'm going to be different and say Ireland Grand Slam. Two Grand Slams in a row. I'm going for it. Fuck it.
Back to back. Jordan, 96-97.
More like South Africa in the World Cups, but you know.
I'm going to be different for the sake of it.
Italy.
French Grand Slam.
Yeah. That's what the bookies are saying, Sam. So,
but I think it'd be very interesting if there was no Grand Slam and if come the last weekend three teams had an opportunity to win it. And
yeah, like, I really like what you said about that, Sam. I think it's a great point. Like, I love when it's all on the line the last weekend of the Six Nations. You know, it is a more interesting competition when one beats one and the other beats the other, and you know it's not always a Grand Slam on the line.
Yeah, especially that last weekend, like obviously from an Irish point of view, but France England, the last game, 8 o'clock on that Saturday, if that's kind of the decider, maybe, or even Ireland Scotland, if Ireland win, put the pressure on France or something like that, that would be pretty fun. And then obviously Wales Italy, that's when you can, you know, see people walk your dog or something like that. There's no point watching that game. So okay,
who thinks going to win the Rugby European Championship? Do we think Portugal will be able to maintain their growth?
I'm just looking forward
Georgia
to
on top again.
I'm looking forward to more Italian relegation talk. That's what I love about the Six Nations every year. But no, we'll do a separate pod for Rugby Tier 2 stuff, Wesley.
You always say that, we never do it.
You are more than welcome to go ahead and do that. But yeah, we are great to have Six Nations back. We're buzzing for Friday night. And we'll be back next week to recap round one of said Six Nations. Boys, appreciate it as always. Enjoy Sixmas. Enjoy Sixmas Eve. And we will catch you next week. Bye.
Night night.